Have you ever looked in your refrigerator for something to eat, and then you pull something out of the back of the refrigerator, and you go, oh, I wish I wouldn't open that. Like you found something that has been in there too long. Maybe it's changed some colors, but it has a definite some odors coming from it, and you go, oh, no. I'm sure we've all done that from time to time. I'm sure my refrigerator is not the only one that happens to. But every now and then, you've got to go do what? You got to clean out your refrigerator. You got to kind of take the stuff out that, you know, is bad and get rid of it. And that's kind of what we've been doing for the last several weeks. We've been in a series called The Heart Matters. And so what we've been doing is we've been taking the verse from David, Psalms 51:10. It says, create in me, O Lord, a clean heart, right? And renew a right spirit within me. So he said, why don't we take this verse and just say it over and over again once during the day and ask God to help us to say, what does that mean? And just take each word, create. What does the word create mean? What does the word clean mean? What does the word heart mean? What is God talking about? How's that talking to me personally? How can I have a clean heart? Create in me a clean heart, O Lord. And so then, as pastors do, we go to meddling, not really, but we go to taking different things that we know that can attach to the heart that you need to clean out. Just kind of make sure you're seeing those things, because sometimes they're hard to see. So we started with guilt. And we say sometimes we get guilt in our heart. And guilt comes from the things that we either have done wrong or we have perceived that we have done wrong. Maybe we didn't do it, but we perceived it that way. And we feel guilty about it. And it hides in our heart. And when guilt is in there, then it's hard for us to have a good relationship to the person or to God who we feel guilty to. It's just hard because we feel like we owe them something. And a lot of times, if that's the case, then we overcompensate. And especially if it's like with our children or with a spouse, we might overcompensate. We said the way you get rid of guilt is by confessing your sin, for confessing what you did wrong or what you perceive you did wrong, and taking it to God in prayer first. And then if possible, taking it to the person and saying, I'm sorry for what I've done, but I just need to let you know. And then that frees us of guilt. Next, we looked at anger. He says, sometimes anger hides in our heart. But generally, anger doesn't hide because it comes out. And if you have it too much in your heart, you kind of get the phrase, I'm a hothead or you're a hothead, right? And we say, where does anger come from? Well, anger comes from the fact that we feel like that you owe me. And I know it doesn't. I know we said this last week, and sometimes we think it's it can't be that simple, but it really is. It boils down to feeling like that somebody has done me wrong, or I perceive that somebody has done me wrong. And because they have done me wrong and I didn't get what I deserved or felt like I deserved, then I'm angry. And we talked about that because in order to get rid of that, the thing that you must do is to forgive again. But this time, you're the one forgive. You forgive them for their action. You release them. And once you release them, even though they've done you wrong or you perceive they've done you wrong and you forgive them, then that releases the anger inside. And we said it's really important to get the anger out because those things can clog our hearts. Those things can keep us from our relationship with God and keep us clean. So, from being clean. So, today we're going to look at another one. Now, this one's really hard to see. Like, you'll see it in other people, but you won't see it in yourself. It's really hard. You got to really search for this one really hard with me because it will weigh you down and you don't even realize it. It's greed. Greed. Because like when you have anger, everybody around you knows you have it. And you know you got it. When you got guilt, you know you got it. You feel it. It weighs you down. But with greed, greed is one of the things that can hide really easy in your heart. And you can cover it up and with a lot of good stuff, good things. Like, I'm just being frugal. I'm just being wise. I'm just being really good at saving. Guilt says, I owe you. Anger says, you owe me. But greed says, I owe me. Greedy people think they deserve every good thing that comes in their what comes their way. Their mantra is, what is mine because I've earned it. That's why it's really hard for someone who has greed in their heart to part with their money or their stuff, because it's theirs. They're scared. They're not going to have enough if they let go of anything. You know, I find that a lot of times, much like angry people, greedy people are the same way. They always have a story to tell. When you go to their house, they will tell you about everything they have in their house and where everything came from and how they got it and how much they paid for it or who gave them what. You know, like everything has a story. Again, greed is hard to see. It's a different animal. Because if you ever touch it or poke this animal, it roars. So I'm not trying to poke any animals today. Believe me. But in all my years of pastoral counseling, I have never, ever had someone come to me and say, Pastor, I need to talk with you. I've got an issue with greed. It's never happened. I've had people come to me and say, Pastor, I've got an issue with guilt. I've had people come to me and say, Pastor, I've got an issue with anger. But greed always seems to hide. And they're generally very frugal people. And being frugal is a good thing. And they're generally very good stewards. And being a good steward is a good thing. Because remember, greed is really good at hiding behind good things in our heart. We mask greed with good things we're trying to display. What's so weird about greed is that it's so easy to see in someone else. Like when I see it in someone else, I can point it out really quickly. But to see it in me is like really hard at times to do. And by the way, greed has nothing to do with how much money you have. Poor people can be greedy people. Rich people can be greedy people. It has nothing to do with whether you have money or you don't have money. Let me give you a few clues this morning that when greed pops up its ugly head. Greedy people, not always, but generally tend to talk a lot about money, and they tend to worry about it a lot. Greedy people find it often hard to share. Greedy people are generally not cheerful givers. Greedy people never seem to have enough and often need just one more thing. Greedy people can be, not always, but often very competitive and sore losers. And once they get something, they never let it go. They may say, I might have a need for it later. Or I just have just enough to get by. Let me give you an illustration, a personal illustration, when greed popped up and I saw it in my own heart. It's ugly. So this is an ugly illustration. Please don't think any worse of me than you already do, but you probably will. In 2010, for Mother's Day, we purchased a car for my wife, the Honda Accord that's out in the parking lot today. It was more for me, but I disguised it as we're purchasing it for her. Because back in the early 90s, we had gotten married, and I needed to trade in my Dodge convertible pickup truck because we had a baby now we were carrying, and we couldn't fit it in the pickup truck. And so went down to the Honda dealership and wanted to trade it for a 2010 Honda Accord, brand new car. And they wouldn't finance it for me. They wanted me to lease it because I was on a youth pastor salary, wasn't making that much. So ended up having to get a new Nissan Sentra four-door. And I thought, one day I'm going to buy that Honda Accord. Well, I waited and waited, and finally I thought, okay, we got the money, we can go do this thing. Went down, we went and purchased a brand new Honda 2010 Honda Accord. After Gidget had it for a couple of days, I said, honey, you know, I really need to drive this car. Because, you know, you park it in the school parking lot, and it's going to get banged up because, you know, teachers are the worst. They have all their luggage, and they get out, boom, boom, boom. And they don't look because they're women. They don't think about the things, you know. I'm sorry. I know you're going to hate me even more now. Shouldn't have said that one. But they don't think like a man does about his car, you know. And I was like, nah, you better let me drive it because I can park it. And I gave her the lecture, you know, if we take this thing to Walmart, you make sure you park it all the way at the end, right? All the way at the end. If we go somewhere, you park it all the way at the end. So I was washing it, waxing it, keeping it clean. We had a guest evangelist. He's a great friend of mine. Carl Harris came, and he came to do a revival, a week of revival. And while he was there, I took him out to eat a few times. And so when I would go, I would park the car like at the end of the parking lot, wherever we were eating, and make him walk. And, you know, first he saw, he said, oh, I love your new car. It's great. But I think the second or third time we went out, he said, Lee, you know that car is an idol to you. And I said, no, Carl, you just don't like to walk. You need to lose some weight. I'm helping you, buddy. He's like, no, Lee, it's really an idol to you. And I thought, no, I'm just being frugal. I'm just being smart. Matter of fact, this car came with a lifetime warranty. So I told Gidget, I said, you know what? This will be the last car we buy brand new. I said, we're going to ride this car and drive it until I die, and then I want you to bury me in it in the grave. I said, because it's going to last us a lifetime. Well, it comes along, and I begin to think about what Carl said, but it really hit me in the eyes. We had at the church we were pastoring at the time, we had a large food ministry, and we had a lot of people. It was a busy, busy night. I mean, it was just packed. We had a lot of people there that night, and we had a staff that was helping everybody. And one of our leaders came to me and said, hey, came to my office and said, Pastor, we've got somebody who walked 5 miles with their two kids, a man and a woman, walked 5 miles because they were needing food and diapers and kind of things, and they're not going to be able to carry this back for 5 miles back. Can you let them ride with you in your car? Well, I had parked my car behind the church in the backyard back out there. So I went out to go meet them, and immediately I could smell cigarette smoke all over them. And I looked at their two little kids, and I thought, oh, man, if they get in my car, I'm going to get cigarette smoke inside that car. And if they get in my car, well, those kids are probably going to open a bag of chips or something to eat because they're hungry. They walked 5 miles for dinner. I'm sure they're going to eat and drink something before we even get pulled out of the parking lot. And I'm going to have chips everywhere, drinks spilled in my car because, you know, the rule is you can't eat in the car, right? And I'm going to have it's just going to be a mess. And I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. So I looked around the room and saw one of our young workers that was working who was really gullible, and I went up to him and I said, hey, would you mind taking this couple, this family home for me, and I'll just do what you're doing for a little bit, and then you come back. Oh, yeah, Pastor, I'd love to do that. So he gets them in this car, which was an old Buick. He got them all in there, cranked it up. Well, he tried to crank it up, but it wouldn't crank up. The battery was dead or something. He just wouldn't crank. He goes back out and says, Pastor, the car won't crank. Okay. All right, I'll get him. So on the way, I began to realize how foolish I was acting. And the Holy Spirit really began to deal with my heart and say, man, you know, you've got a lot of greed. Now, why is greed so strong in your life? You know what I learned from that? It's because of fear. Fear motivates greed. What I learned is, what was I afraid of? Well, I was afraid that they're going to mess my car up. What was I afraid of? Well, I'll never get the smell out. What was I afraid of? That they're going to somehow hurt my car in some kind of way. What I learned that day is that fear fuels greed. What I learned that day is when it comes to greed, many times it's fear that causes us to hold on to what we need to let go of. Because we're afraid that somehow God won't provide, that God won't take care of me, that I've got to have this or that. You know, it's hard with greed because when it comes to greed, so many times, yes, it's fueled by fear. But we ask ourselves, like, what if I give? Will I have enough? Fear says, what if I do this or give that or surrender this? Will God take care of my need? See, our hand is always, when we have greed, is always holding on to something that we just don't want to let go of. And the other hand is trying to grasp at something else to get more and more and more. Let me just begin by reading you a verse from Luke chapter 12. We're going to stay in this whole chapter today, so if you want to turn there, feel free. But Luke chapter 12, verse 15. Listen to what Jesus says. He says, beware, which means warning, 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 warning. The warning light's going off in the Bible, and it's flashing, and Jesus is saying, listen to me really carefully, because this can get you. Guard yourself against every kind of greed. Life is not measured by how much you own. Jesus is saying, listen, this is a warning because I know that if you're not careful, greed will sneak into the back of your heart and get a hold of you and you won't even realize it. Because it's really good about hiding behind things that have good intentions and good motives. I love the last part of verse 15. Life is not measured by how much you own. Think about that for a moment. You ever see the bumper sticker that says, he who has the most wins? Remember that was real popular a few years ago? Until the bumper sticker came out, he who has the most still dies? And that kind of killed that bumper sticker, didn't it? But that's how a greedy person thinks. To win, I've got to have more. I got to have, what I have matters. Possessions matter and they're important to me. And Jesus is saying, life is not measured by how much you own. I don't know how many deathbeds I've been at, but I've been at quite a few. And in every deathbed, I've never, ever, ever heard someone say, if I could just get one more thing. I've never had anybody talk to me about what they owned at that moment. Jesus tells us here that is easily for greed to hide, and we gotta be careful. Let me read you the parable he tells. It's a really cool parable. Maybe you heard it before. But in verse 16, this is the story that he tells. Then he told them a story. A rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. He said to himself, what should I do? I don't have room for all my crops. Then he said, I know, I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. Then I'll have enough to store all my wheat and other goods. And I'll sit back and say to myself, My friend, you have enough stored away for years. Now take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. Let's just stop there before we read the rest of this parable. You probably know the rest of the parable, but pretend like you don't. If you had just heard that part of the story, you would say, this man's pretty wise. This man's a farmer, and he has a bumper crop. He has all this extra wheat, and he's not letting it go to waste. Oh, no, he's getting an extra building, and he's going to store it in this extra barn. He's going to make good use of it. Man, he's being frugal. He's being wise. He's looking out for his family for years to come. I am sure, and this is not a knock if you're watching online, but I'm sure if you are a roofer or you are in the tree business, you're doing really well this time of year after Helene. I'm sure their profits are going way up. And I'm sure that it would be easy to say, you know, we're gonna take this time, money that we're making right now, and store it in the bank and save it so that when times are lean and the sun is out and it's shining and there's not the storms and people aren't thinking about the roofs and people aren't thinking about the trees in the yard, that we'll be set. We'll just build a bigger barn. We'll just put it in a bigger bank and save this money. You would probably say he's wise, he's smart. That's good thinking. That's kind of how a greedy person thinks. Because a greedy person never thinks, what should I do with the extra? They already know what they're going to do with the extra. When you look at this parable, in verse 21, Jesus said this, or verse 20 and 21. But God said to him, you fool. He didn't say, you wise man, you frugal man. He said, you fool. You die this very night. Then who will get everything you work for? Yes, a person is a fool who stores up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. Did you get the parable? The farmer has a much better harvest than he expects to have. It was a great year. His wheat overproduced. Everything came in. And yet, he was foolish. Jesus says, but you're a fool. Though we may have called him wise, we would say this guy's blessed, smart to save all this wheat. See how greed hides behind good intentions, being frugal? And he's thinking, I worked hard. It doesn't happen every year. I made an investment. I deserve what I've gotten. Now, understand, if anybody ought to know, it ought to be a farmer. Because a farmer, to produce wheat, he's got to have great weather. I mean, if you get too much rain, it destroys the wheat. If you don't get enough rain, the wheat won't grow. It will die. If bugs get into the wheat, it's going to kill the wheat. I mean, he's totally really dependent upon God to produce a harvest, the farmer is. If anybody ought to wake it up and realize that it's not him, but it's God, it ought to have been him. The issue with the farmer is two things. Number one, do you notice that he never thanked God for what he had been given? He never stopped and gave God thanks and praise. But beyond that, he doesn't ask God what he should do with the extra. He immediately just assumes it's his. This is a farmer. You may not be a farmer. But when God blesses you, do you ever say, God, what do you want me to do with the extra? Matter of fact, if I were to ask everybody to say that this morning, what do you want me to do with the extra, and it's hard for it to come out of your mouth, then it's probably a greed in the heart somewhere, right? God, what would you have me do with the extra blessing that you have given me? Verse 18 again. Let me read it again. Then he said, I know what I'll do with my extra. I will tear down my barns, build bigger ones. Then I'll have room enough to store all my wheat and other goods. And I'll sit back and say to myself, friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. I believe this man suffers from a disease that I like to call not BF, but BBF. Bigger Barn Syndrome. Bigger Barn Syndrome is the answer. That's what will secure me in life. That was what will set me in life. Anybody ever watched the show American Pickers? Besides me? Oh, I loved that show back in the day. I don't know if you know, I give you bad news, but Frankie passed away. But back in the day, when it was in its heyday, oh man, I loved that show. That was a cool show. Christian and I would get into it, we'd watch it, and make Gidget watch it with us. But as we watched that, one time they went to a house of a Pentecostal pastor in Kentucky. His wife had passed away, and he's decided that he wants to get rid of a few of his stuff. So Frankie and Mike go up into the house, and they get there, and they have a hard time getting through the door because there's so much stuff. He has all this stuff on the second floor, and it's just everywhere stored. They can hardly walk through the house on the second floor. There's so much stuff. And, of course, they're just making bids and looking at things. But that's not all he had. He had a huge building behind the house full of nothing but stuff. And I don't know. I just wonder if he ever preached on this passage. Because, like, how would he preach on this passage with a straight face? And, of course, he had a story behind everything that he had. And he knew where it came from and how much he wanted for it. Here's the point. One day, all his stuff will not be given away because that pastor or this farmer was a generous man. It's all going to be given away because he's a dead man. Let that sink in. What do you want to do with your stuff? You want to give it away and be known as a generous person? Or you simply want to be known as a dead person who then lost all this stuff? That's what Jesus is saying in verse 20. He's saying it more in their lingo. He says in verse 20, but God said to him, you fool, you will die this very night. Then who will get everything you work for? Oh, I know the standard answer, Pastor. It's my kids and my grandkids. They'll get it. Really? I'm just going to be honest with you. Haven't you noticed anything you give your kids or your grandkids, they tend to waste if they don't earn it? And if you give them too much, it will destroy them. Just a thought. If I'm stepping on my toes this morning, I might as well step on yours too. Right? Verse 21, again, Jesus says, yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. What Jesus is really saying is this. If I have a greedy heart and hold on to everything I have, then it's impossible for me to have a healthy, rich, deep relationship with God. It will keep my heart from having that rich relationship with God. So as we're going through the series, Lord, clean out my heart. If there's any greed, God, clean it out. Because I want that rich relationship with you. Let me give you an illustration. Suppose you had a seesaw. Put a seesaw in your mind. Everybody knows what a seesaw looks like. Take all the possessions you have and put them on one of the seesaw, one of the sides. And it'll go boom, and it goes flat down, right? It's heavy. Now, think of the other side of the seesaw. Take everything that you've given away and put it on the other side of the seesaw. Is it still way up here? Or did it kind of balance out a little bit? The goal is for it to balance out. If your seesaw is loaded down with all your possessions and sticking way up in the air, and you're not putting anything on the other side, then you might need to rethink some things. Because Jesus would say, "You fool." Not me. I'm not poking the bear. Jesus would say, "You fool. You will die this very night. Then who will get everything you work for?" I'm not saying that if you have greed that you're going to die tonight. That's not what I'm saying. I don't think that's what Jesus meant. Though I do think it was ironic that in 2012, after we bought the car 2 years later, I just thought about this as I was going over the message this morning. I had a major heart attack driving to Columbia in that car. You fool, you'll die this very night. I think what Jesus is saying is, you better make some changes. And here's what I need to remind myself. None of my possessions or my wealth can I take to heaven. But the things that I give to bless others will be celebrated many times over in heaven. And I want to have a reason to enjoy the marriage feast of the Lamb, enjoy the celebration. So how do I get rid of my greed? Very quickly. Number one, ask Jesus for forgiveness. When we confess our sins, we find forgiveness, and God will begin to work in our life. So invite him into that area. Say, "God, help me." Second, look for a way to give and be generous. The way you defeat greed is by giving. It's really simple. It's by giving. And the more you give, the more it frees you. Because then you find the joy in giving. And it becomes a pleasure in your life. And like the Grinch, your heart starts to grow. I want to close this message by reading from Luke chapter 12, the last few verses, 22 through 33. Because this will give you faith and help. Then turning to disciples, Jesus said, "That's why I tell you not to worry about everyday life, whether you'll have enough food to eat or enough clothes to wear." See, he's coming against their fear. He's saying, "I'll take care of you. For life is more than food and your body more than clothing. Look at the ravens. They don't plant or harvest or store food in barns, for God feeds them. And you are far more valuable to him than any birds. Can all your worries add a single moment to your life? And if worry can't accomplish little things like that, what use is worry over big things?" Look at the lilies and how they grow. They don't work or make their clothing. Yet Solomon, in all his glory, was not dressed as beautiful as they are. If God cares so wonderfully for the flowers that are here today and thrown into the fire tomorrow, he will certainly care for you. Why do you have so little faith? And don't be concerned about what to eat or what to drink. Don't worry about such things. These things dominate the thoughts of the unbelievers all over the world. But your Father already knows your needs. Seek the kingdom of God above all else, and he will give you everything you need. So don't be afraid, little flock, for it gives your Father great happiness to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to those in need. This will store up treasures for you in heaven. And the purses of heaven never get old or develop holes. Your treasures will be safe. No thief can steal it. No moth can destroy it. Whether your treasure is, where your treasure is, there your desires of your heart will also be.